in this situation. Now, when you talk about guys like Purdy, like Fred Warner, like George Kittle, who didn't hold out, who were ready for training camp, who got paid, it's been cool. I forgot another one that I didn't mention that I was thinking about as well. Trent Williams held out last year, wanted his money. How did his season go last year?
He was in.
He was hurt half the year.
That's true.
And they damn near played none of the season.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at you like, dog, no disrespect. And I understand that you, as the player, you're probably going to be like, well, that ain't got nothing to do with me. I'm trying to get my money right now. But as the team that you're asking the money for, dog, this has not worked. For the last 3 or 4 years, this has not worked. The guy that holds out wants the money. We give it to him, and he plays below the standard of the contract all four times.
Juwan isn't holding out, though, right? He's just let everyone know he's unhappy and he's going to be there. Or is he
The last I heard, it was a hold-in situation, potentially.
Okay, yeah, because I thought he was going to be there, but I don't know. That's why I said, I don't know if it's a hold-in or, like, all right, he's going to be running drills.
That's what I heard. That's what Ayuk did last year. The last I heard, it was a hold-in situation. Bottom line is, it's not you're out here getting ready to play. It's not you're out here participating in all the team drills. And I'm not. Look, that's his leverage. That's Juwan. From Juwan Jennings' point of view, I understand it. I get it. This is the time to do it. This is maybe your one chance at a big payday. I think they're saying he wants like $20 million a year. He wants a different gear and all this other stuff. If I'm the 49ers, like I'll probably end up doing it. Like I'll probably end up doing it just because, this is the situation I'm in. I got to deal with it. But there's some reservation. And this is where Jerry Jones comes into play. Because when Jerry Jones said what he said yesterday about Micah Parsons, you don't have to play the clip.
We have Jerry.
I got Jerry right here. Jerry, come on in the studio. Jerry, yeah. Take a seat. First of all, I'm not really a big fan of you. You know, I just want to say that to your face. I don't really like you. I don't like your team, but I appreciate you taking the time to come on the show. Now, somebody asked you yesterday about the Micah Parsons situation, and what did you say exactly? Because I don't want to misquote. What did you say? Well, KC, I want to first of all say hello to Stanley, because I know he's a listener. I know he's had my back when you guys have tried to kick my back in on this show. And I just want to thank Stanley. And Stanley, if you're listening, we can go to Morton's and get a bite to eat anytime. So thank you, Stanley. But what I said was, sometimes it doesn't matter if you pay a guy and you pay a Micah Parsons, because Micah only played 6 games last year. It could happen again. There was another time when I paid somebody one of the biggest contracts in the NFL, if not the biggest, and he was out for 2/3 of the season, and that's Dak Prescott. So what you need to understand is it doesn't always matter if they pay the guy, and that's what we're dealing with right now with Micah. Thank you, Jerry. Thank you. You can leave now. You can leave. But
also threw shots at Diggs as well on his team about paying him.
Wait, I didn't see the Diggs.
Yeah, he was like, we paid him. That was probably a mistake. I'm paraphrasing. That's essentially what he said.
Oh, Jesus. Come on, man. But here's what I'll say. And mind you, I want to repeat, because sometimes y'all don't be listening to me. In my heart of hearts, if I'm the 49ers, I'm probably going to pay Juwan Jennings, because that's kind of what I have to do. I just kind of like, honestly, he caught me at the right time, because I don't want to go through this mess again. Talking about I'm the 49ers. I don't want to go through this mess again. I really just want this to be over and focus on being a winning football team. So I might just pay him the money. But we get our, it's funny what Jerry is saying, but I do understand what he was saying. He was essentially saying, like, I could pay this guy all this money, and then he's just hurt, or his production is down. And I've seen that, and me, Kenny, I've seen that for the last 4 years with these contract negotiations with the 49ers. These guys hold out, and that's their prerogative. They're trying to get paid. I get it. But they hold out, they get the contract, and then they, all four of them, have underperformed.
That's fine. You can think that. You can't say that. Well, no, like, you can't say Jerry that out loud.
Jerry can't say it. You can say that during the negotiations, but you can't say that out loud.
John Lynch spoke today, and he says he anticipates Juwan Jennings being out there. I don't know if that's GM speak for, like, just getting out in front of it and then putting the bad sign on Juwan if he's not out there. But, I mean, if he's not holding out and all that stuff, do you feel any differently about it? And he's willing to practice through it?
Yeah, no, it's fine. I feel good. Let's pay him. Let's make sure he's good to go. Like I said, number one, because he's been a good 49er. I didn't want to use the term good soldier, but he's been a good 49er. And he has been a hell of a find. I think Juwan was like a six-round pick or something like that out of Tennessee. And he's been a good find. He's been a good 49er. Like I mentioned, he was on his way to being potentially the Super Bowl MVP when they were playing the Chiefs a couple years ago.
Was so a seventh-round pick, by the way.
Seventh-round pick out of Tennessee. So that's a good find, and you want to keep those guys around. He's using the timing. He's using the momentum and the situation to his benefit. And to a certain degree, if I'm the 49ers, he got us. He got us this time. We're in a pinch. If Pearsall was 100% healthy and there was no issue, let me ask you, Jesse, do you think you would be a little bit more reluctant to just give in to his demands?
Maybe not, because, like, I just don't know what Ricky Pearsall is either way. Like, he played a little bit last year and there was, like, flashes and stuff like that, but it's just, I can't say definitively, like, yes, this guy can lead us this season. We don't need to pay Juwan Jennings. Like, I don't think, I think what I'm looking at is, like, there's no trust in that wide receiver room. So I'd still say, like, yeah, you probably still have to pay Juwan. At least for this year, maybe give him some guarantees or whatever, because he's on a contract year and all that. But I think you'd have to help him out a little bit.
Right.
Because the receiver room does look a little weak right now.
Yeah, and because I was listening to something yesterday, and they're 100% right. They asked the question, I think it was Cal Okami and Matt Barrows. They asked the question, they're like, all right, if Juwan Jennings isn't on the team, who's the one and two receivers? And it was like, all right, it would probably be Pearsall and Robinson, but Pearsall's on the PUP list.
Robinson could get suspended.
Yeah, Robinson's going to be. So who is it after that? Who is it week one? We're talking about Cowing and one of the rookies? So they're in a little bit of a pinch. They're in a little bit of a pinch. Now, one of the things that I might also say if I was the 49ers is, yeah, but we got George Kittle. So Juwan Jennings, like, you're asking for, I believe, $20 million a year. Now, that's football money, NFL money. I know the guarantees is more important and all this other stuff, but you want to be paid, and your argument is simply, and essentially, I'm your number one receiver.
Yeah. You just threw out a number right there, 20. I can't do 20.
I don't want to misrepresent Juwan.
No, yeah, I'm just saying, if we're talking numbers, like, just throw some numbers out there, like 14, 15 for this season, like, sure, that's fair, I think, for Juwan Jennings. But if you want to, I feel like 20 is like, all right, just play this year out and then go look for that next year.
Yeah, I feel like I've heard 20. Like I said, forgive me. I don't want to, if he hasn't asked for that, I don't want to misrepresent him. But I feel like I've heard he wants 20 or close to 20 with the new contract. But I'm looking at it like, all right, man. Look, you want that, but essentially George Kittle is our number one pass catcher. And then Pearsall is coming back. Who knows what he's going to be? But what about, and they may feel differently than I do about this guy and what he could be in the future, but what about when Brandon Ayuk comes back? So you could be looking at, you're like the third option in the offense. And Christian McCaffrey might be before you. And if I agree to this right now, I'm going to be paying the guy that's the third or fourth option in the offense $17, $18, $19, $20 million a year?
Yeah, like, counterpoint.
That sounds a little crazy.
Counterpoint, though. Like, we've never seen a receiver really come back from an ACL tear and, like, just be what he used to be. And
that's how
CMC, as good as he is, like, we had no clue what the hell was going on with his Achilles all the last year or whatever. And it's just kind of like, are we sure he's ready to go? Like, I know he says he's healthy and stuff, but, like, we're ready to trust him again?
That's I understand that. And the point about Ayuk, that's how I feel too. I I can't trust that he's going to come back, especially this year, anywhere close to where he was before. Here's a counterpoint from the league, and this is where things get contentious.
I'm not negotiating.
And I don't know if you want to go here. I don't know if you want to go here. But I'd say this. It's like, Juwan, you're right. The wide receiver room was it's pretty rough right now. Last year was pretty rough. It might have even actually been a little better because Debo was around, depending on how you feel about him. But you were essentially the number one option last year. Were we any good? Did it help us at all?
I did my job.
You did. But did it help us at all? Were we any good? Is this a situation where it's like, hey, like, essentially, I could be making an argument, whether we pay you or not, we're going to be in trouble with you as the number one. If you're the number one, we're going to be in trouble.
Hey, John, maybe we weren't good because you drafted the receiver who couldn't stay on the field.
How about you get out of my office?
Damn. I feel like I had a point there.
The moral of the story is I do believe they're going to play Juwan Jennings. I do think they should for a number of different reasons. But it has not gone well when these guys have held out and they tried to pay him. It just has not gone well. There's not a lot of success stories in that situation. And Jerry, I understood his point. I'm glad you came around. I didn't say that. And why are you back in here? Goodbye, Jerry. Walking in here, man. Where is Vanessa? Get this guy out of here.
Real quick before we go to break, somebody really needs to get Jerry Jones on the Cowboys. Like, somebody stop. Give him the unplugged controller mic and just here, talk to hey, this one.
Jerry, it was crazy to hear him say that the other day. Once again, I kind of understood what he was saying.
He took a shot at Dak. What is Dak doing? Yeah. I'm just minding my business, taking shots at me.
What? Dak is over here telling everybody, I think we can win this year. I think we could do some good stuff. Dak, I think it was right after the practice. He had a nice little pass to George Pickens at everybody, feeling good about himself. And the owner just
Jerry Jones like, get a load of this loser.
Man, we gonna come back, man. We got my main man, Joe Davison. He's gonna pull up on us, man. We talking a little Sac State. We talking about some high school stuff. I was talking with some people last night. Talking about family last night about, like, hey, we're not that far away from Folsom Grant, which is one of the big games in this area in one of the in like the last decade. It's gonna be fantastic. So I want to get his thoughts about what's going on with football and just catching up with my man Joe D. Man, I always love talking to him. So he's gonna be on the show next. It's D'Lo and KC. It's KC Day here on ESPN 1320, Sacramento's number one sports station. D'Lo and KC here on ESPN 1320. It's KC Day. You already know what it is. It's my birthday. I gotta get more air horns for your boy. Shout out! I got my main man, Joe Davison from the Sacramento Bee, the Sacramento legend. He's rocking with me right now. We were talking during the break, and we were doing our best weather report, I guess, here on this sports show. And
we're all about news, man.
That's it. You know, that's it.
The weather. See, this is how limited our relationship is where we have to dig into weather to kind of get it going. You know, it's a conversation starter. But it was about San Francisco weather.
Yeah, it was about San Francisco.
Bay Area.
And somebody can correct me if I saw this wrong, but they're not San Francisco isn't supposed to break 70 degrees for the rest of July. And they said between June and July, they've only broken 70 degrees twice. And that would be the first time it's been that low since like 1906 or something like that. I think that's what I saw, but it was something crazy like that.
Yeah, and that's what we talk about when we miss each other. You know, say, hey, happy birthday. Hey, what do you think of the weather patterns down in San Francisco? Isn't that just something?
Crazy. Useless facts. But I did want to save this for the show, and I just wanted to remind you, we revisited one of the all-time D'Lo and KC moments a couple weeks ago when poor Joe was in the witness protection program.
Felt like it.
It's an all-time moment, man. We played it back because we talk about it, but we actually played it back, and it was an all-time moment. I don't think it made top 10 moments, but it should have. It was top 5.
Well, it's a blunder moment. I think I was at a car wash or something, and got stuck. And I explained it that I'm at a car wash without a car because I was in some kind of, botched witness protective deal. But they didn't catch me, and so it must have worked. They got the other car that came out of the that came out of the car wash, though.
See, that's how you do it. That's how you do it. Watch enough of those movies, you know how to make those moves. But yeah, man, Joe D, man, he's on here today. Just it's the middle of the summer. We got a few things to talk about. Just wanted to catch up with him. And I was telling you last night, I was talking to my wife and kids, actually, and they were probably like, "Why are you talking to me about this?" But I was like, we're not that far away from one of the biggest high school games in recent memory. And I'll let you talk about like where it ranks in recent memory. But Folsom and Grant are going to be playing each other week zero, week one, something like that, out in Folsom. And first of all, shout out to those two schools, those two programs for making it happen. I think it was as simple as Grant might have been like, "Hey, Folsom, we got an open week. Do you want to play?" And Folsom was like, "Yeah, let's play." And they made it happen. And like I mentioned, this is one of the biggest games that we've seen in recent memory, man. Am I overdoing it with that, or what you think?
Oh, I think it's totally true. I think it's awesome. I guess I had to check my phone and see if that's the right date. Yes. So it'll be Folsom and Grant, and Folsom is it just won its fourth consecutive Section Division One championship in like nine in the last 10 years. And Grant's a three-time defending state champion, state finals, two of the last 3 years, won it last year. Great coaches at both schools. Fantastic, great opener. I mean, it might be the best season opener since those two teams played in 2010 to open season in 2011. And both of those times, Grant rolled. Grant was just still on top of its game. Famed coach Mike Albergini, the late great Mike Albergini, and Folsom was rising to power under Chris Richardson and Troy Taylor as they got that program just off and going. Program been around for decades, but it struggled with power football and went to the spread when everybody else did. And then in 2010, with Dan'l Graves, the National Max Player of the Year, Sacramento Bee Player of the Year, quarterback Dan'l Graves leads Folsom in a rematch against Grant, and they win. Folsom wins big and wins a state championship. So both teams, it's just so good and so fitting that these two teams play. Grant is now going to be in the Division One playoffs too, as well, Kenny.
Okay, I
after
didn't know
playing
that.
in lower divisions because of the section's sustained success. You keep winning section championships three in a row for Grant, then you move up. Grant doesn't fear anybody. The Pacers are also taking on De La Salle. We've heard of them over the decades. De La Salle's coming up for a game in December. I'm sorry, in September in non-league. Last season, Grant played De La Salle for the first time, and De La Salle rolled, and De La Salle was older and more experienced. So now Grant's got a lot of experience, so that should be a terrific game. So great scheduling locally. Love to see it. And Sarah of San Mateo has been in the state open division three of the last 4 years, and will play Folsom and it Sarah's opener on a Saturday. So there's all that good scheduling everywhere. Love it.
Yeah, man, and it's one of those things where I mean, it's always been pretty good, but what would you say, Joe, for the last 10 years? I mean, the football here in Sacramento, the high school football is elevated to being that of one of the best in the state. Obviously, you see these schools, Folsom, Grant, and other schools winning state championships, but I mean, it was always good. Like I said, back in the old days when I was in high school, it was good, but it seems like it's turned up a notch in the last decade or 15 years or so.
You're spot on, and I think it's the growth of this area. It's reflective of that. And there's always debate, Kenny, that, oh, there's so many new schools now, some 40 high schools in the last 40 years, seriously, in this whole section. And you think about that's Monterey Trail, Franklin, Sheldon, Laguna Creek of the Oak Grove Unified, Natomas, Intercom, Vista del Lago, all the Rockland, Granite Bay, Whitney, all of those schools, they weren't around 30 years ago. And so what's happened is it didn't thin out the talent pool. With the growth, all these schools are big schools. They're still large enrollment schools, 2,500 students, some of them close to 3,000. And so that, and terrific coaches and a lot of youth football programs, and communities that support it. There's over Yolo County, up Highway 50 to Folsom, and Eldorado Hills and above, or up in Auburn or Rockland. Anyway, it's everywhere, including in the city with Grant and Sac High, and Burbank had 17 playoff teams in a row at 3500 Florin Road in South Sac, and so all that was, and Grant was the our Sacramento will be team of the decade for the 1990s and the 2000s in football under Coach Mike Albertini. They had the best teams, they had the best players, they had the best coach, they had the biggest moments. Though teams like Nevada Union and others were right there with them, and so then the area closed the gap because Grant was just steamrolling everybody, and that started with non-league early season games. Oak Ridge did that with Ian Book as a sophomore quarterback. And then he beats the famed Grant Pacers, and they chased after him, and they threw him around and beat on him, and he survived it. And they knew they had a great quarterback. He's in the NFL still with the Philadelphia Eagles after a great career at Oak Ridge and Notre Dame. So, and then Folsom, by losing to Grant, redid its program in 2010. And so there you go. So, and it's great to see Grant still. Grant had a couple down years. It's common for private public schools, but Grant does come right back. And football's bigger than ever out in Del Paso Heights.
Yeah, I love that program, man. I love what they do in that area and with that program, because you've seen it a number of different times, man. I was showing somebody around the city, and I took them by Grant High School, and I said the amount of pride that this community has for the athletics, particularly the football team, is I just love it. And I'm a Clatchy Lion, I'm a South Sac guy, but I love the love in the DPH that they have for Grant High School and Grant football.
And that's been there for decades. And nobody graffitis Grant High School. You don't see any graffiti on that big gym with beautiful murals. You don't see it. You don't see it on the football field or anything, because people that's off limits. You just don't do it. It's like the Sam Pinnell Center in South Sacramento. Nobody defaces that. That's just too valuable. That's just too much pride. So I think that's and so much of it's through athletics and girls basketball and baseball's had some good revival seasons in the past and trying to get going. Both Grant's got new baseball and softball facilities, fantastic, and a new pool, and I'm going to get a new press box put in for the football stadium and Mike Albertini Field, incidentally. So yeah, the city school pride is big. It's big, and especially at schools like Grant and McClatchy is trying to get going, and McClatchy's got new coaches, and we've talked about this before. That's a crown jewel school in Sac City Unified. Been around since 1937, I think. McClatchy Lions. They just need more bodies in football because they do well in other sports. Because you can't play football in high school with 15 guys. You might start the season with 22, and then attrition, injuries, things like that. And McClatchy and Kennedy of Greenhaven, also the Sac City Unified, have forfeited football games this fall against the Grant Pacers, knowing they were not ready. They did it last season. McClatchy did. Kennedy did not. Took a big loss, but it allows Grant, because this decision was made in January when the league schedules came out, Kenny, it allowed Grant to get non-league opponents without having a hole in its schedule. That's how far the gap is in the city.
Yeah, for sure. I got my main man Joe Davison here from the Sacramento Bee, man. We're just talking everything prep sports here in the city, and we talk about the football elevating out here. It's elevating in all sports, and I think one of the things that we're seeing, I can speak specifically to the baseball side of it, is I've got a 12-year-old son who plays baseball, and I'll just speak for this area that I know, the Laguna Elk Grove area, super, super competitive with the baseball, and that's why this stuff is elevating, because it's starting at 9 years old. Like, this is that youth baseball that you got out in Laguna and out in Elk Grove at 9 years old is some of the best in the state. Like, these guys are playing statewide, and they're playing at a high level, and it just trickles down into the high school level. And we're seeing that in prep football, we're seeing that in AAU basketball, and with the baseball as well, and soccer as well.
And there's a lot of it's fueled by growth. And this has been a pattern, Elk Grove and Laguna, for decades, and the Elk Grove Thunder and Herd baseball team with its youth program, and Jeff Carlson, the high school coach, and a lot of section championships, the best baseball coach in this region's history, the most decorated, most championships, and quite a few guys in the big leagues. Rowdy Tellez, Dylan Carlson, son of the coach, are in the big leagues, and that's hard to do. And then the Franklin Wildcats of the Elk Grove Unified School is about 23 years old or so. In the last several years, they have really been a NorCal Division I powerhouse, winning a section Division I championship. And Brian Kilby and his great staff, and they're getting guys drafted and signed and everything. So it's same thing, same up in Placer County. The youth programs that feed into Granite Bay and Whitley and Rockland and Wood Creek, fantastic. Same with softball. The softball in this region is at the Deloro Golden Eagles of Loomis in Placer County, where the state ranked number one softball team by Cal High Sports for most of the season. I mean, and that includes the heavyweights down in Southern California, because that's where the best programs are. They're as good as this area is in team play. Modern day is the number one team in America, down in Santa Ana in Orange County. Number one team in America again. And they have like 38 players, Kenny, and I may be low on this guess. They have 38 players or so last year that had Division I offers. So those are a lot of reserves. And so they become a magnet for transfers. So that, as great as Folsom is and Grant is, they're not at that level, and they know it. But they can certainly play each other, play Sarah and play Sam and De La Salle to get stronger. That's not their goal. They're not trying to close in on modern day. They just want to keep winning section championships and state championships. But even De La Salle and Sarah, as monstrous as those teams have been, they get mowed under by modern day and Bosco. Those teams of Bosco, Bellflower down in Southern California, they have become the best programs in America. And I'm not so sure they should even be in the CIF. They're going to have that kind of amount of transfers. And a lot of kids will transfer in for their senior year, play football, and then transfer back for the winter quarter.
That's
And then
crazy.
both schools will have a scholarship signing party. It's
ridiculous.
Yeah,
those are borderline college programs down there.
They are. And have them play against other college programs, the IMG Academies. And nobody's suggesting it's not a great opportunity to be able to transfer and go and move around, but it doesn't, it peels away a lot of the high school stuff that we appreciate that, like we're talking about here and with these local teams.
Yeah, for sure. Shout out to my guy, Coach Kelby, too. He's a listener to the show. He's a big 49ers fan, so when I see him, man, he's always showing love. Shout out to my man, Coach Kelby. One thing, as we stay on prep sports real quick, because I want to talk to you about some Sac State stuff as well, but the one thing that we've got to figure out here in the city, and I don't know what it is, but basketball wise, we've lost players to Southern California and Vegas. So obviously everybody knows Jerry McCain. He's from Sacramento. He left. He went down and played, I think, at Modern Day down in L.A. They had the young
Sierra, man, Sierra Canyon, I think.
Sierra Canyon or Modern Day. I can't remember what Sierra Canyon is exactly where it is.
It's one of those guys, one of those teams down there.
So we lost that. There's another young guy I just saw on Instagram the other day who's going to go to Sierra Canyon, who was a big time prep player here. I think he might be in the ninth grade or something like that. Monterey Trail, they just lost their stud freshman. He's going to Bishop Gorman, I think, in Nevada. Basketball wise,
no, he's not even going. See, that's it. Not to interrupt you, my friend, but
yeah,
he's going to, I can't even remember the school. It's Durow. He's a 6'7" forward, Sacramento Beale Metro player, terrific player, well coached, great coaching staff. That's his decision, family's decision. But they went to a high school just outside of Henderson, Nevada, that didn't do anything at all last season. And there's NIL money involved. This is a family decision, but if they're trying to go to make him a better player to get him on the recruiting radar, he was already on the recruiting radar. And Jared McCain would have gotten all those same scholarship offers that had he played for Mike Wall and Folsom, which is where he had family go. I mean, he's as great a coach as there is in the entire state, yeah. Mike Wall. So, it's kudos to the ambition and everything, but it's sometimes it doesn't work. You get a lot of kids who transfer from school to school to school.
Yeah.
Sometimes they go to a prep school. Sometimes they come back. And then you see the pattern in college, the transfer portal and college basketball and It's just whatever fits. But you know, I think we're kind of old school. Not to sound like a curmudgeon, it is your birthday and everything. But you know, I'm refreshed with the schools that have people who were there for all 4 years.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I agree. I am old
at least
school
three.
In that sense. Yeah,
okay, I'll wiggle a little bit. At least 2.5.
Man, see, even that's too much, man. I want all 4 years. That's where you're gonna be at, man. But I am a little old school. Things have changed in that respect. Switching gears a little bit, things have changed in East Sacramento by Sac State, and they got it popping over there. The Sac State football team. We'll start with them, my man, Coach Brandon Marion. I watched. I don't know if you've seen their YouTube series on GoGo TV, GoGo Football TV on YouTube. I just watched the second episode yesterday. And one of the things that stood out to me in both episodes is, now we have to see it on the field. I got to actually see it. But the amount of top-end talent that they have in the building on that roster, I can't remember. Doesn't mean they're going to be the best team or nothing like that, but I can't remember that level of talent being at that school, at least since I've been paying attention to Sac State. Do you remember like more like 5-star, 3-star, all this type of stuff?
Oh, those not even close.
Yeah, it's crazy.
No, not even close. And Brendan Marion is the reason. He's the coach. He's spirited. He's fun. He rocks that cowboy hat. Media day was over the weekend up in Spokane, Washington, and he had two of his players there wearing a cowboy hat. Aiden Meek is one of their veteran offensive linemen. He's from Bakersfield because this is what I wear anyway. So there's a good spirit about that. They've never signed this many 3-star, 4-star. They've never even had any that I know of any 4-star signings before. Even Ryder Lyons, the 5-star quarterback at Folsom, this area's best player and one of the top players in America, he took a recruiting visit. I think it's kind of out of a favor, you know, because the programs have coaches that Chris Richardson's the offensive line coach for the Hornets, a long time at Folsom, that kind of thing. But there's nothing wrong with it. I appreciate when guys do that, and why not have a little fun with it? Yeah. But you're right. And Coach Marion, his whole motto is one great year could change your life, and including you may have some of these guys just for 1 year. Mm-hmm. And if they want to go somewhere else, that's the new line of thinking. You don't try to talk them out of it. You want to make it the best environment and setting you can. If they want to move on, you encourage them, you help them. Yeah. And so we'll see what they can do. Just the 72 new players, you know, new quarterbacks, Jaden Rashada from Georgia. He's from the East Bay in Pittsburgh. Cardale Williams is coming in from Tulsa. Running backs from Pittsburgh is Rodney Hammond. Sam Adams, the second of University of Washington. Savion Red of Nevada. Sammy Norris of UNLV. I mean, those are all FBS programs. Yeah. Yeah. And they can't all carry the ball. So, and the fullback in this new offense, the go-go offense, which is designed to have a lot of plays and all kinds of options, including a fullback. So that's going to be interesting. And the offensive line's got 3 starters back for position coach Chris Richardson. So they were only picked to be 6th in the 12-team Big Sky race by media and coaches in a poll. But UC Davis was picked 2nd. And, you know, that's a program that doesn't want to do the portal heavy. They want the 5-year players, the 4-year players, like, you know, the high school players. Tim Plow's the coach, and it's a proven product that Dan Hawkins was doing. That's what, you know, when he was the head coach there, and Bob Biggs and, you know, and Bob Foster and all of those great coaches and, you know, over the decades, forever, Jim Soaker, the greatest of them all. And so that's what they're doing. They're getting a lot of recruits. And Caden Penix, a former DeLauro Loomis player, he's their new quarterback. So I think the Big Sky is going to be exciting. And Sac State's last year in the Big Sky and in the FCS. UC Davis is happy being in the FCS. Best season ever in the FCS last year for the Aggies. 11-3, win-loss record, pushed champion, eventual champion Montana State in a great Big Sky games, great football. So both teams should be the Cosley Classic, the end of the regular season, Kenny, should have something on it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Davis is a
playoff berth, a conference championship. This is great.
Davis is going to be legit this year. Davis is going to be real good this year. I think Sac State, some of that ranking and everything, I think it had a little bit to do with, first of all, they're leaving. First of all, they've been getting a lot of attention and a lot of headlines. And some of those coaches and media guys are like, hold the brakes, pump the brakes a little bit. You know, you're gonna have to prove it. That's, I think that's where some of that preseason ranking might have been. But that's just,
and they're excited about it. They want to prove it.
Yeah,
I mean, that's the swagger and the extra bounce in their step. And I went to the spring practices and went to the spring game. Everybody's active. There's constant activity. There's attention to detail. That's impressive when all these guys are new. Mm-hmm. And Chris Richardson's the holdover from the previous regime.
Yeah.
You know, Big Sky Conference champions in 2019, 21-22 under Troy Taylor. That's when it got going. And then a tough season last year with the injuries, and that's what led to a new coach in Brendan Marion. And this is his first head coaching gig. He's fired up. I don't think – they had 8,500 people went to the spring game. Yeah. I've been to spring games at Sac State in the years past where there were dozens of people.
Yeah.
Not even quite hundreds of people.
Yeah.
Though I think dozens adds up to hundreds later. But, you know, I don't know. We'll talk about weather. Get back on track.
And look, Joe, we talked about football. And football, I'm super excited for that. The basketball program is making way. I can't wait for them. And I think we've talked about this privately before. I've been saying for years, and I know you've been advocated too, no disrespect to the Big Sky, but you guys got to get out of there. You need to be in the Big West. You need to be in the WCC or something like that. They finally made the move to the Big West. I think that's going to help the basketball program and the other Olympic sports immensely with recruiting and all this other stuff. I can't wait for that either.
Well, I think it's a great move. And, I could appreciate the previous coaches at Sac State basketball. Brian Katz, a fantastic coach. Right. He's the only one who's led them to Division I winning seasons twice since they moved up to Division I in 1991. So it's been a long, tough road. And now it's Mike Bibby's turn, and he wanted this job. His big hire, the former King star, his big hire was somebody he worked with at the Kings, and that was Al Bianconi, the strength and conditioning coach. This guy is world-renowned.
Yeah.
And he was strength coach for the Chinese national basketball team. He was with the Kings forever. He's had his own operation helping student athletes, and so when the Kings were great with Vlade and Weber and those guys and Bibby, he was an anchor for all of that. So he told me when I've known Coach Al Bianconi for years, strength coach. He'd deny he was a coach otherwise. But I said, what did you see in Bibby that makes you think that this can work? And he said, as a player, he had an incredible attention to detail on fundamentals of the game and being in shape and keeping him. He's in better shape now than he's ever been, but he was great as a player. He didn't miss games because of injuries.
Right.
And then Al Bianconi said that Bibby flew him down 5 years in a row down to Phoenix, where he was a high school coach at his alma mater, Shadow Mountain High, national powerhouse in Phoenix. And he worked with the kids for several weeks, strength and conditioning. They won state championships. Mm. And what he said that he saw was he really taught the fundamentals of the game.
Yeah.
You know, the just defensive rotations and faking movements and just right to the basic thing. The thinking, Kenny, is that these guys – you know, if you're already great athletes, you know, if you can do the fundamental part of basketball, then you're going to be a better team.
100%.
We see it in high school level. We don't see it as much in the NBA. It's just more three-point shooting. It's wide open, which is kind of cool. I'm not a big fan of it. You know, in high school and college, when we have the NCAA tournament that comes to Golden One, I think it's going to be here again this next spring, you'll see that. That's fun. You're a basketball player. Fundamentals are fun to see,
absolutely.
And the teams can do it. So that'll be the real challenge for Bibby, because he's got 14 new players, complete turnover through the transfer portal, including Shaquille O'Neal's youngest son.
Yep.
And they're trying to see if Shaq could DJ some games, as part of his duties.
He definitely gonna be in the building. I know you're gonna be in the building. I'm gonna be in the building, man.
Jake, I'm gonna be in the building. I think I've never been this excited for Sac State basketball, and I think it's a great storyline for us in the media.
Yeah,
and it's just great for the city with that new well being revamped to put 3,200 seats, and because the old gym is tired.
Right.
You know, I don't think they're getting those kids this many with that old gym.
Right.
It's a great practice gym, and now the time is here. And that's credit to President Luke Wood and Athletic Director Mark Orr, and they have backed up what they said. Now they still have challenges. You know, are you going to be able to make it to the FBC? NCAA denied the waiver to move up. Must get that football stadium redone. And this fall, we'll have new concessions and bathrooms. So they're working on it. And, you know, FBS inclusion will help the floodgates for NIL money from companies and business in Sacramento who are waiting for that moment.
Well, they'll hit up Joe Davison for when they need that NIL. You know what I mean? He's got you. He got it like that. Joe, I appreciate you, big dog, man. We're going to talk closer to that Grant Folsom game. We're going to talk again, man.
And remember, on your birthday, it's not just a birthday. It's a birthday week.
That's right. That's right. Words to live by my man, Joe Davison, man. Appreciate you, Joe. I'm going to talk to you soon, man.
All right, my friend. Talk soon.
All right. Take care. Joe Davison of the Sacramento Bee. That's my guy right there. Jesse, how you want to do this, man? We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I got some things to talk about with the NBA, the WNBA, and then my girl, Trista Crick. She's going to pull up for her Tuesday visit, man. So we will be right back on D-Lo and KC, ESPN 1320. Back here on D-Lo and KC. Today is KC Day. It's your boy's birthday.
Acknowledge me.
Indeed, the Catholic Chief of Cancer Season. The main event of Cancer Season is this is the last day of Cancer Season. So, you know, we close out the show the right way. And one thing that I'm going to do today, I can promise you one thing I'm going to do today, is when I leave here, I'm going to leave here with one of these nice bottles right here. Baker Family Wines. Why? Of course I would. Of course I would, right? Because it's my birthday. I deserve that. I've earned that. So I'm going to take this one right here. I like a white wine. So I'm going to take one of these Baker Family Wine bottles home. I'm going to crack it open. I'm a champagne and campaign tonight, man. I'm going to have a good time. So shout out to Baker Family Wines for always looking out here at D-Lo and KC, always making sure that we got some of the finest wines. And we got something in the works. We working on some things with Baker Family Wines. Absolutely. We working on some things that maybe people can attend. Maybe people can be at. I don't know. We're working on some things, man. But remember, from the baseball diamond to the vineyard, Dusty Baker's journey is as legendary as his swing. Baker Family Wine celebrates Dusty's passion for handcrafted small lot wines, crafted with care right here in West Sacramento. I bet you guys didn't know that, man. It's right there in West Sacramento, man. So make sure you visit the tasting room and taste the story behind the legend today at BakerFamilyWines.com. Like I said, I'm taking this bottle right here home to the crib. That's exactly what I'm doing. And I'm going to have that for my birthday. Jesse, we were talking earlier about some of my favorite birthday memories. I'm trying to think of some off the top of my head, but obviously,
do you have any memories from your 21st?
I was about to say that was a classic. Nothing crazy happened, but that was a classic. That was an all-star weekend type thing. My birthday was on a Thursday. It was on a Thursday, turned 21, went to, Jesse, you don't know nothing about this. This is way before your time. Maybe some that are listening and some in the chatty house will know all about this. I know if D-Lo was here, he would know all about this. But turned 21 on a Thursday. My man Aceberg Slim, he came out to celebrate with me. Came out here from New York, celebrate the whole weekend. It was an all-star weekend thing on that Thursday. They had a nice little event at Hard Rock Cafe down at Downtown Plaza. That's where I was at. It was popping. It was absolutely popping. I went there on Thursday. Friday, I was at Sidelines, you know, with the crew. I think my man Brandon Bush was in the chatty house, or was in the chatty house. I think he was there as well for that Thursday or for that Friday event at Sidelines. That was popping. We had the room at the Hyatt. You know, we took the after party over there at the Hyatt. They end up telling our guests we had to leave after the after party. And then I, in a frustrated state, walked to Denny's on J Street, got me something to eat. Ace will tell you I was a little three sheets to the wind. I would disagree. I remember everything about that. But, yeah, angrily walked down to Denny's as we got something to eat at about 3, 4 in the morning.
Who amongst us never ended up at a Denny's at that time?
I know it was too crazy. Like they start doing like stupid stuff and like fighting and trashing the place. So they had to do what they had to do. But I wish they would bring back that Denny's right there on J Street. That was prime location after a club. Once again,
yeah, Denny's past 1 a.m.
You can't do that.
Denny's past 1 a.m. is like breakfast / dinner, whatever you get that night, and a show, and you don't know what the show's gonna be.
Yeah, the show ended up being too much. It ended up being too much. So did that, and then on Saturday at the Hung King Lounge, that was where the spot was every Saturday. The Hung King Lounge, we was there. It was a movie. The vibes were all the way up. Also had a barbecue on that Saturday afternoon for my birthday. That was a hell of a weekend. That was a true all-star weekend right
there. Sounds tiring. Yeah, we did a whole thing.
Did a whole thing, man. Turned 21, had a real good time. When I turned 20, we had the family reunion that I just went to in Charlotte. It moves around. So the basis of the family is in Columbia, South Carolina. And they used to always have it in Columbia. Then they ended up kind of moving it at like every other year. So they would have it in Columbia. Then they would move somewhere and have it in D.C. That was the first one I went to. Then they would come back to Columbia. Then they would go to New Jersey. Then they would come back to Columbia. And then in 2001, they came out to California. And we are like the only California family they know. Me, my mom, my cousins, her sisters. Those are the only family they know. Everybody else is in the South. And they came out to California. Then the reunion was here in Sacramento. We were at the Embassy Suites downtown. And I was 20. So I couldn't go out yet. But I was like, nah, I'm about to turn this thing up. We have a banquet for the family reunion. Now it's on a Friday night, but it used to be on a Saturday night. And the plan was, all right, well, the banquet will be over at 9. We've got the ballroom till I think 12 or 1 p.m. After the banquet's over, calling all the homies. I'm putting it out there, putting flyers out there. Everybody come to the Embassy Suites. We have to get it popping. You know what I mean? We turn it up. And no lie, there was probably about 50 people out in front of the Embassy Suites ready for this party that the Embassy Suites had no idea about. Like, this was not...
Yeah, you have to hold on, guys. 10 more minutes. Family reunion's almost over. All right, 10 more minutes, I swear.
The Embassy Suites had no idea about. They did not sign off on this. They did not co-sign that you could do this. And I just told everybody, yeah, come on, come through. We got it popping. So there was like 50 people in the lobby, in the entryway and all this other stuff. Embassy Suites is like, hey, why are all these people here? And I was like, oh, you know, we're having a party after the banquet for my birthday. They're like, yeah, we didn't approve that. You can't do that. Now, these people got to go unless they're staying here. So everybody had to leave, and they just kind of dispersed throughout the city. There was another little house party that was going on that night that we drove to, so ended up being a good time. But those were two memorable birthdays.
You ever thrown a party yourself, like at your house?
Yeah, when I was in middle school.
Yeah, I was in high school. We had a fight party for Pacquiao Mayweather.
Oh, snap.
Parents came home that night. It was like 40 people. Everyone went home, but I almost messed up.
Did the parents know?
No, not really. Ooh. I told them later on, but...
later on, like when?
When I was in college and stuff like that. But like, it was bad because like, mom's all, why is the house so clean? Like, damn it, I cleaned it a little bit too good because one of my buddies was there too staying with me.
And it was on the pop. You said Pacquiao
Mayweather? Yeah, it was Mayweather Pacquiao. Oh,
man. Woo!
Yeah.
I watched that fight... what's the bar? I don't even think it's the same name, but that was across the street from Memorial Auditorium.
I'm not sure if I know that area. I'm not sure the bar, though.
It's right across the street from Memorial Auditorium. Somebody in the chatty house will say it. But I watched that fight there, and I was very, very upset because they had let's just say 40 TVs in there. All 40 TVs were on the fight, and it was game 7 of Clippers Spurs, that first round series, game 7 of that Republic. That's exactly what it was. Shout out to JT Lowe. And I'm like, yo, And it was like prelims. Like, it wasn't even the fight. The fight didn't start literally till maybe 45 minutes after that Spurs Clippers game ended. And I was like, can I get one TV on this game seven? This is Lob City. This is Chris Paul. This is Spurs. Give me. No, man. We got to
paid $80 for this fight. You're going to watch all of it.
Yeah. And look, they got the money back. Cause I think we bought tickets to go watch that fight there. I want to say it was like $40-$50 to get in the building there. And it was either $40-$50 and you had a food minimum. Excuse me. I'm doing it on air. If I pass, it's happening on air, I promise you.